Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Merriweather & Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at georgiadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
This is that time of year where we probably hear less from Georgia coach Kirby Smart on the record than we do any other time of the year. He's deeply entrenched in recruiting, maybe a little bit of vacation here and there. We're kind of in the off season. It is talking season for all of us. But ironically, that means a little less talking for some of the coaches, at least until we get a little closer to SEC media days, things like that. So during this period of time, anytime we do hear something from Kirby Smart, it's going to be a little bit more interesting than just sort of a run-of-the-mill statement, because it kind of comes, as I said before, during a little bit of a rarity of those kinds of comments. And so last few years, the one time, or one of the, I guess, the handful of times during the spring and summer that we know we'll hear from Kirby is typically around this event. It's called the Region's Tradition. I like golf. I actually like the, what you call the PGA Tour Champions. That's their, it used to be called the Senior Tour, but they decided that there was a better name for it than that, and they call it the PGA Tour Champions. This is one of their majors. It takes place in suburban Birmingham. I've been before. I think it's kind of fun. Especially if you get a chance to be a part of the Pro-Am event. Well, Kirby Smart was there yesterday. Now, before we're done, the PGA Tour Champions League itself, the promotion, put out a really fun video of Kirby. We're going to talk about Kirby the golfer here a little bit. That's before we're done today. I think that'll be really fun. We'll get to that. But prior to that, let's do what we're paid to do, which is talk a little bit of football here. And prior to playing in the golf tournament, Kirby did an interview with the radio show hosted by Cole Kubelik. You know him, SEC Network analyst. Greg McElroy, you know him, ESPN college football analyst. McElroy, the former Bama player. Kubelik, the former Auburn player. They do a radio show there in Birmingham called the Mac and Cube Show. We got a couple of clips over the course of the next couple of days we're going to give you from this. We'll also put a link out there so you can go listen to the entire interview yourself. And I think you should check it out and listen to the full deal here. Not as long of an interview as he's done with them in the past, maybe. And therefore, the clip I've got for you here is pretty short, to be completely honest with you. But in this small number of words, I think it gets pretty interesting. One of the themes was areas in which Kirby Smart wanted to see off-season improvement, or some of those off-season priorities that Georgia had. I'm going to focus on the offensive side of the ball here for a moment, because Kirby Smart acknowledges what I think we would all say is a pretty big deal for Georgia, and he also kind of alludes to how Georgia's trying to mitigate the loss of Brock Bowers. Small number of words, very short clip, shorter than we normally play, but I think still interesting nonetheless. This is Kirby Smart with Mac and Cube from yesterday.
Then offensively, we've added a couple wrinkles that fit what Carson does and fit what our wideouts do, because it may not all be Brock Bowers based. It may be some other guys involved.
So total confession here for a moment. There are some things that probably sound more interesting than they actually are. Total confession, I think this is probably one of those things, because I have to admit, the idea of Kirby Smart stops by to say some new offensive wrinkles on the way for Georgia. That's one of those things that, ooh, really? That sounds really interesting. Tell me more about this. In actuality, it's probably a little more like sort of nuts and bolts or meat and potatoes or, you know, bread and, you know, it's going to be a little bit more basic than it probably sounds. But the idea that Georgia's going to the lab, they got the lab coats on, you know, they're going to be drawing some stuff up. They're going to get extra creative there on offense. That's one of those things that probably sounds a little bit more interesting than it actually is. But the overall theme of what Kirby Smart says there, I actually think is pretty important. And I think it's important for two reasons. Reason number one is I believe there is just a basic truth that exists for Georgia, a basic, fundamental, obvious reality that has to be confronted. And that basic, obvious, fundamental reality is it is not going to be easy to replace Brock Bowers. And so the fact that Kirby Smart says in an interview situation, hey, yeah, you know, listen, we were Brock Bowers based on offense. Now we can't be. So therefore, we got to have some offensive wrinkles in order to address that. I just think that's sort of a cool thing to hear from Smart, even though it's a relatively short number of words, because it addresses an obvious fundamental reality. In other words, sometimes the natural conversation that like fans and like say non-coaches and players are having, and the inside baseball conversation that coaches and players themselves are having, sometimes they're very different, right? Sometimes the perception of a program on the outside looking in is a little bit different than the perception of a program on the inside maybe looking back out. But in this particular case, it seems like there's a good bit of alignment here. That Kirby Smart says, yeah, listen, we got to figure out a few offensive wrinkles because we don't have Brock Bowers anymore. Like, that's the same basic conversation that if you're hanging out at a, you know, cookout for your, you know, mom on Mother's Day this weekend and Georgia fans are kind of getting together, that's sort of what they'll be saying too. And in this particular case, it sort of sounds like the coach sounds like any other Georgia fan in one of these sort of rare instances where maybe we're all kind of having the same conversation here. I think that's pretty interesting. And to sort of bolster just how prevalent that discussion is right now, ESPN was also writing about this the other day there as well. I love the series they do, and I don't love everything ESPN does, but I do love this. They'll take their, as they call it, way too early top 25, and they'll look at each of those teams in that top 25, and they'll offer them like little blurbs and like, you know, the same issue being discussed for every one of those top 25 teams. It's sort of easy content probably, but it's also, I think, interesting enough to justify its existence and obviously interesting enough for us to sort of talk about this kind of stuff from some, you know, from time to time. So the other day, ESPN, for all of its way too early top 25 teams, was looking at the, I guess, the biggest overreaction after spring practice and things like that. And the topic that got addressed here was the one that Kirby Smart just mentioned, which is, what do you do in a Brock Bowers-less future for the Georgia program? We just heard Kirby on this. This is also what ESPN wrote about this the other day there as well, that their overreaction, they're not saying this is true. They're saying this is the overreaction that some people might have, is that the Georgia offense won't be nearly as good without star tight end Brock Bowers and receiver Ladd McConkie. So not only do they address the Bowers part of this, they also bring McConkie into this there as well. It's Mark Schlabaugh writing. I'll read a little bit of this to you. Schlabaugh says, there's no question the Bulldogs are going to miss the two aforementioned pass catchers who were selected in the 13th and the 34th pick in last month's NFL draft. Both players were explosive after the catch and served as safety valves for quarterback Carson Beck, who was confident they'd be open when they were on the field. But Georgia still has plenty of firepower returning and more talent coming in this summer. Schlabaugh writes that Beck should be even better in his second full season as starter, trending as the potential number one pick in the upcoming NFL draft. Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas emerging as go-to receivers. Dylan Bell, versatile playmaker. Colby Young looked like a red zone threat. And then Oscar Delps, another future NFL draft pick, joined by Ben Urosek, the Stanford the tight end, who's going to be giving Beck another proven target. So that is what ESPN says, but the issue that Kirby Smart addressed of, you got to have some new creative offensive wrinkles to kind of make up for the fact that Brock Bowers leaves a big offensive void that has to be filled. And this is where, even if the actual offensive wrinkles aren't quite as, you know, I mean, when you hear that, the first thing that comes to your mind, oh, they're going to run like a double reverse. They're going to, you know, they're going to do all this crazy stuff. The actual truth is the wrinkles themselves might not be that obvious to the naked eye necessarily. But when you think about the kind of talent that Georgia has, what Mark Schlabaugh just wrote about, the specific situations here, it is the sort of thing where taking that talent matched with creative play calling, it could be the best way to make sure you are well set up for what it's going to look like in a life without Brock Bowers. I mean, think about some of the names that that Schlabaugh just mentioned there. There are guys like Dominic Lovett. What we saw, I believe, from G-Day is a template that would suggest that how Georgia plans to use Lovett here this year is a very, very different way in which he was used in what was a very productive season at Missouri, going back to his final year there in 2022, that he was essentially a slot receiver at Missouri. But here at Georgia, it seems like they have plans on using him in a far different way. Maybe that's an example of one of those offensive wrinkles. The same thing for a guy like Dylan Bell. Dylan Bell, I believe, pound for pound, is one of the most interesting players on the Georgia roster because we saw him used at running back a year ago. He's clearly a capable receiver. He threw a touchdown pass against Tennessee. So if you're saying new offensive wrinkles, creative offensive philosophy here, Bell's the perfect match for that because the word that Schlabaugh used was versatile. Of course, he has the potential of doing so many things so well. Trevor Etienne is also one of those guys there as well. Mike Griffith was all over Etienne yesterday, offering a lot of praise for him, you know, perhaps justifiably so, but certainly a running back more in the mold of guys like James Cook and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift, the kinds of running backs that Georgia has also in the past with different offensive coordinators gotten really creative in how they used. Etienne, a part of some new offensive wrinkles, it makes sense that might be the case. And you know, a guy like Ra-Ra Thomas, who, you know, was not a big part of the story for Georgia a year ago and has also battled injury here a bit and had to overcome the fact that at Mississippi State, he was in such a different offense than what he is here right now. But maybe this is that year in which Georgia kind of finds a way to use the body type, to use the athleticism, and get something specific out of Ra-Ra here this year. And then I'll also add Colby Young to that there as well, because we saw on G-Day, for me, what Young is as advertised. The big target who can go up, high point the football, who can be a red zone weapon and be a third down weapon, and getting creative in how you use him, well, that to me makes all the sense in the world. So Kirby Smart says, in a Brock Bowers-less world, there are some offensive wrinkles that are needed. And to me, that sounds good to my ears, and I'm guessing for most Georgia fans, sounds good to them there too, simply because it probably does require getting creative in order to make sure that you can fill the, tough for me to say, statistical void left behind because of Brock Bowers moving on. So let me kind of bottom line all this by simply saying it this way. I do not shortchange the challenge of replacing Brock Bowers. Sometimes I think the prevailing media narrative is probably overstated. It's probably exaggerated. It's probably at times not looking deeply enough at what's actually going on. In this particular case, I think if anything, maybe we've understated the value of Bowers throughout the years. The touchdowns that he scored in 2021, the receiving yards he put together in 2022, the way in which a couple of times, almost for sure, he put this team on his back in 2023. Does Georgia beat Auburn on the road, for instance, this past fall? If not for Bowers, maybe not. At times, we may have been guilty of understating how valuable Bowers was to the Georgia offense. But it sounds like Georgia's got a big plan in place for how they move on without him. This coaching staff, if anybody's going to be capable of coming up with some creative wrinkles to make sure you get the most out of the offensive talent, I trust George to be able to do that. And very interesting that Kirby Smart foreshadowed some of that yesterday. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Video, 10 a.m. across all platforms, radio, Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Ref, podcast, Apple, Spotify. We post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com, and we do a nice little rundown of everything that appears in the show there if you ever kind of want to see all of that. But we call that sort of our show notes. You can check that out there at dognation.com. Really good stuff on all of that. Today's show brought to you by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Now, we say that and we mean that because stretched all across the state now, serving people statewide the same way they have in the Atlanta area for a long time, that's what Meriwether and Tharp is all about. And I think what's really interesting when you do this, Meriwether and Tharp, who's handled thousands of divorce cases here in the state of Georgia now going back years, when you sit down and you hear people tell stories, their story about their divorce situation, when you hear that, I think one of the things you start to see are some common threads that appear over and over. Now, there are also a lot of situations that are very specific to those individual circumstances. We certainly understand that. But there are some commonalities sometimes that do kind of pop up a little bit here on this. And I think that Meriwether and Tharp, one of the cool things about what they've done, Bob Tharp, who, if you're watching a video, you saw there on the screen, I think that what they've done is they've tried to use those commonalities as a way of shaping the service they provide. And I choose the word service intentionally. You are in a time of need if you're going through the divorce process. We understand that. And Meriwether and Tharp wants to serve you in that time of need. Divorce is not a lovely thing to consider. I certainly understand that. But it is certainly, I think, a very strong positive that for people who find themselves one of the most challenging things they'll ever face, that Meriwether and Tharp wants to serve you during that. I think that's outstanding. And one of the ways in which they do that is by providing you some cost certainty in going through all of this. And they've gotten very creative on this because there are different types of divorce proceedings. Some of these are very straightforward and there's, you know, kind of a lot of agreement maybe. In that case, you may want to do like what you might think of as like a DIY option. And if you're thinking about it like a DIY option on that, you can maybe get that for as low as $99. Or if you want something that's, you know, or if you feel like your situation is more complicated, you want something that's more traditional in the coverage area, Meriwether & Tharp can also provide that for you there too. And they also offer, and this is maybe the most creative and the most interesting thing they're doing right now, what they call their Model M&T level of service, which provides a really, you know, awesome level of service that kind of comes at a flat rate price. Or if you want to pay like a monthly subscription fee there on that as your divorce process is ongoing, well, you can do that there, too. So please find them online. It's GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. That's GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. Meriwether & Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. All right, we have got Terrence Edwards here coming up in a little bit. We talked about Kirby at the golf tournament before we're done today. Kind of a lighter side of him. I like this time of year for Kirby because it's the most relaxed you ever see him, and I think that everybody deserves to relax here a little bit. And so that is pretty clearly what Kirby Smart does there on that. But prior to all of this, let me also go around the doghouse here for a moment. Let's stay with the topic of Kirby Smart and some of the stuff that he discussed yesterday during an interview with the Mac and Cube show, Cole Kubelik, Greg McElroy. We gave you a very short clip earlier about his thoughts about the Georgia offense and some new offensive wrinkles that could be on the way. How about what he wants to see from the Georgia defense? And this is maybe the most direct statement, perhaps, understandably from the defensive-minded coach, but the fact that he thinks that side of the ball needs to show improvement, and as Kirby says it, this is one of the big offseason priorities for UGA. This is what Kirby Smart said.
We had a lot to work on. We got to play better defensively than we did. We were number one in the country in third down, but we didn't create enough turnovers. We didn't stop the run well enough, and then offensively, we had to do the same thing.
So there you go, Kirby Smart saying didn't stop the run well enough, didn't force enough turnovers, and that's an area in which they want to be better for this upcoming season. And as far as like specifically when it comes to some of those run issues, things we saw play out, Kirby Smart kind of got into a little bit more detail about exactly what that is. Here is Kirby Smart again.
Yeah, we've looked at a lot of different ways. The quarterback running the ball, the running quarterback is becoming more prevalent, and so we want ways to change it up to affect him and not let him sit there and be comfortable. So we've looked at a lot of things in that, a lot of gap scheme things defense.
So we saw the quarterback run. We saw the outside runs. A lot of that at times caused Georgia a problem a year ago. This is one of the reasons why we think one of the biggest things to happen for Georgia thus far in this entire offseason was a guy like Christian Miller, who it seemed like might leave the program. He chose not to. Georgia was able to hold on to him. You know, we just had a spring transfer portal window where a lot of teams, we've addressed LSU this week, desperate for defensive linemen. Georgia didn't have to be desperate for anything because Georgia was able to hold on to and retain the roster that it had. And so when it comes to being better against the run and all of the things that Georgia wants to do defensively, the retention on that side of the ball may end up being a pretty big deal with all of that. But it's also kind of interesting here that when Kirby talks about some of those types of things, turnovers or certainly the better against the run, this is an example of a little bit different than what we said a moment ago. When we started the show, we said, hey, the statement from Kirby Smart about replacing Brock Bowers is such a commonplace opinion that not only is Kirby saying that, not only are Georgia fans saying that, but it's ESPN's writing about that, too. It seems like everybody right now seems to have the understanding that going out and replacing an all-time great player like Bowers is a significant issue. On the defensive side of the ball, though, for this particular conversation, it's kind of interesting to note it's not exactly that way, where you just heard Kirby in a couple of different clips, albeit very short ones, talking about, you know, being better against the run, more stout up front. But that's not what people keep bringing up, though, outside the kind of the bubble of the program, the bubble of Dog Nation, when it comes to this Georgia defense. Once again, ESPN doing one of these little blurb things of the day, you know, kind of talking about unanswered questions and things like that, you know, things we still need to find out about teams. They are still seemingly somewhat fixated on the Georgia secondary, which is not exactly what Kirby Smart brings up right there. Let me show you this once again. The lingering question, ESPN says, for Georgia, once again, Mark Schlabaugh, the writer, what the secondary is going to look like this season. Schlabaugh says the back end of Georgia's defense remains in flux after Kamari Laster, Tyke Smith, Javon Bullard all went to the NFL draft, but he says there's plenty of talent still left in the secondary. He mentions Dalen Everett, Malachi Starks as returning starters, Julian Humphrey and Daniel Harris working at the other cornerback spot, and then Janelle Aguero, Ja'Cory Thomas sharing some snaps there at safety, plus Dan Jackson, KJ Bolden, Jake Pope in the mix. Now, what you don't see there from Schlaybaugh, you probably should, is Ellis Robinson. And I think that's the kind of point that I would get to. I have been pretty fascinated by how fixated, whether it be ESPN or other media entities, seem to be on, oh my gosh, what's George going to do at defensive secondary? But here's what I'm here to tell you. If it is true that George's biggest concern this offseason, the lingering question, as ESPN says, is its biggest question, then the rest of college football is in a lot of trouble because Georgia has a lot of bodies to throw at this potential problem. Best freshman in the country, maybe, Ellis Robinson, doesn't even get mentioned there. To go along with Harris and Humphrey, who we think are really ready. He mentions Dalen Everett as a starter returning, and to a certain extent he is, but I don't know what that guarantees for Everett, just to be frank here, this year because of how intense that competition's about to be once fall camp begins. So, you know, Kirby says he wants more turnovers. Secondary play can obviously help with that. But I don't share ESPN's concern for the Georgia secondary. If anything, I'm more along the lines with Kirby Smart, that the tip of the spear for Georgia defensively is what it's able to do in stopping the run. And when you take that away, when you kind of knock out one of the legs of the opposing offenses that you're facing, everything else gets better defensively. So in this particular case, a little bit of a contrast between what national media is saying and what Kirby Smart himself said yesterday, and maybe no surprise, it sounds like to me Kirby Smart knows his team just a little bit better than the national media probably does. And that is around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily. So one more quick shout out here before we bring on Terrence Edwards for our program today. Don't forget, y'all, if you go to dognation.com right now, one of the things you're going to be able to see is a link to our Dog Nation Invasions here for the upcoming fall. We've partnered with Atlanta Sports Trips there on that, and it's going to be a great experience. The season kickoff game against Clemson, we have a huge tailgate plan. The road trip to Tuscaloosa there in September, that's going to be a huge deal. We're going to have a big Dog Nation Invasion, and we need you to be a part of that as we show those Alabama fans and Kalen DeBoer in his SEC debut what this league is all about. And then obviously the big one, heading to Austin there in October, one of the most coveted trips that Georgia has ever taken, and you can be a part of a Dog Nation Invasion for that. And our friends at ATL Sports Trips wants to help you with that, not just with the tailgate event, but also your travel package, how you get there, where you stay while you are there. All of that from our friends at ATL Sports Trips, those options are available to you. So I want you to find out more about this, a big series of Dog Nation Invasion events coming up here this fall. You can go to dognation.com/tailgate for more information on that. One more time, that's dognation.com/tailgate for more information on that. You can also check out our partner, ATL Sports Trips, now powering all of our Dog Nation Invasions, our friends at ATL Sports Trips. So you can find out more about that at atlsportstrips.com. All right, Kirby Smart later on, fun stuff from him with a golf club in his hand. You're going to like this if you haven't seen it. You're going to like this if you haven't heard that. We'll get to that here in a bit. But for now, everything else happening around Georgia football, nobody knows it better than the great former wide receiver. How about Terrence Edwards, as he typically does here on a Thursday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Great to have Terrence Edwards here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp here today. And, of course, Terrence is a sharp offensive mind. He is a head coach, been an offensive coordinator. He's done all the things you need to do, and plus he's also caught plenty of touchdown passes in his life there as well. So we were just talking about Brock Bowers a moment ago, and you can put Ladd McConkey in this conversation there too. Terrence, I take it very seriously that replacing these guys is not going to be an easy thing to do. In the case of Bowers alone, I mean, it's massive touchdowns. Was it 13 receiving touchdowns in 2021, nearly 1,000 yards in 2022? On a per-game basis and sort of an injury short in 2023, he's just about as good as anybody's been. And so when Kirby Smart says, hey, we may have some new wrinkles offensively as a way of replacing what Brock Bowers brings to the table, I say that sounds really interesting to me. I would also say that sounds, I think, probably pretty necessary. You probably do want to be creative in how you use this crop of talent that you have right now. So as someone who knows the X's and O's part of this better than I do, what do you think that looks like for this upcoming fall?
could get creative. And all of those, you know, 13 touchdowns that he had this year, or how many he had, it's going to be, I think, contribute to other players. I don't see one player getting that many opportunities, but it's going to be a collective group. And it's going to transfer power to someone else like Dominique Lovett, who's going to get those. It's going to be the big wide receiver transfer from Miami is going to get those opportunities. So those opportunities are going to go elsewhere, and it's probably not going to look the same as it has done the last 3 years because Brock Bowers is just a generational talent. But that production is going to get transferred to a group, but probably not just one person.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a good thing, but it's also kind of, I think it creates an interesting conversation among the coaches. I love the variety of styles that Georgia has of its playmakers. You know, I think you and I have talked about Trevor Etienne at the running back position before. That's a guy that you could do some awesome things with. You know, Dylan Bell brings, I would say, more strength to the table than the typical wide receiver maybe sometimes does. Colby Young brings the height. And, you know, Dominique Lovett, maybe he brings that little bit of wiggle, right, the lateral quickness that you've got almost every kind of body type among your sort of pass-catching targets you could possibly want here. And so that's one of the reasons why I would imagine that the offensive coaching conversations are probably pretty interesting, because it's not all the same kind of guy. It's not all the same body type. It is sort of a versatile array of talent, and I think that sets up to be pretty interesting.
I think so. I think once you go into a game plan trying to stop Georgia the last 3 years, and the number one priority was Brock Bowers. So where do that defensive mindset shift this year? And it's going to be hard trying to figure out who's going to be the main guy, because each week there could be a different guy stepping up to the table. I've talked about the receiver room, just like you said, they're all different. And how do you go against trying to defend those receivers along with Etienne? And let's not forget the tight end room that we do have, Oscar Delp, and the tight end from Stanford is coming. Like, that room is still littered with great athletes. They're just not Brock Bowers, and that's okay, but they're very talented in their own right. So we have a plethora of offensive weapons that Bobo and company can scheme up to get open, to get in to the same position that Brock was in, but it's just going to be a different person. And it could be out of 10 personnel and or 11 personnel. Damn. Instead of out of 12 and 13, we're just going to do a different personnel group and put another great player at that spot Brock would be in. And we know that he can make the same amount of plays.
I want to put you on the spot here a little bit, and I apologize for doing this, because maybe right now this is not an easy question to answer, but you mentioned Ben Yurosek coming over from Stanford. Now, what we know is that when Yurosek was there a couple of different years, he was a pretty prolific pass catcher for not a great football team, but Yurosek was having really good seasons. Terrence, how do you think he fits in here? And I'm not saying that as a Georgia fan, I'm not happy to have him. It seems like it's always good to add a good player, but Georgia fans, I believe, like Oscar Delp. I think Delp brings a lot of physicality to the table. I think that Georgia fans are seemingly kind of ready for a little bit more of Lawson Lucky. He had a nice catch on G-Day. And yet, Yurosek, just given what he's done in his career, it seems like he's here to play in a two tight end set along with Delp, or, you know, obviously in competition with these other, you know, Jaden Riddell, you got to factor him into this too. How do you think Yurosek fits into the overall picture for Georgia if you had to give your best guess right now?
If you go and watch his YouTube highlights, and he's also doing the jet sweeps and the in around. So he seems like a very athletic tight end to be as big as he is. So I predict that he's going to have a big role, because we do love to put out 12 personnel, 13 personnel. Yeah. So once we do go big, we do have a big tight end who I think can move. He's not this big tight end that's Notre Dame type tight end that's just big that can't move. He can move, so I can't wait to see what he brings to the table. And I like his skill set. Is it Brock Bowers? No. But is he capable of going out and being very productive for this Georgia football team? Yes.
One of the things I've been wanting to get to for a couple of days here on the show, just haven't had time to, is some of the projections that are out there right now for some of Georgia's biggest games of the upcoming season. So if you don't mind, I'm going to do a couple of those with you here right now. I guess the latest to put some point spreads out is DraftKings, and it's pretty similar to some of the stuff that we've been seeing, you know, going back last couple of months. Can you believe the fact that Georgia right now is a 2-touchdown favorite? DraftKings has it as 13.5 points. 2-touchdown favorite against Clemson. Terrence, when these two teams played to begin the 2021 season, it was actually Clemson who was a slight favorite over Georgia. Doesn't this tell you two pretty interesting things? A, how far Georgia has come. They've, of course, won two national championships since then. But also the fact that Clemson's kind of dropped down here a little bit. A huge change of perception in just a small number of years between Georgia and Clemson, right?
I think so. You look at the programs, there's no disrespect to Clemson at all, but you can see the two programs going in two total opposite directions. That doesn't mean Clemson is still not one of those programs that's going to attend for titles coming out of the ACC. But I just think right now, at this current day, that Georgia program is just better than Clemson at this point. And I think we have better players right now. I think we have a better quarterback. And we just have a better system going on right now. You know, Clemson have changed offense coordinators the last few years, but we have too, but we've kept the same system in place. We haven't went and got somebody from the outside like Clemson. So I just like the program, the direction that we're going in. I think Clemson right now is not going down per se, but we're continuing going up. So 13 points, I can see that. But I'm just one of those guys that Clemson and Georgia should play every year. The proximity of the schools is just too close that this is not the first game of the year every year.
No, I think that's exactly right. I'd love to see these two teams playing more frequently, and I know how important that and fun that was for you guys in your senior season of 2002 when you guys got the win against Clemson there in Sanford State, and that's something you've talked about a lot in the past. Another game I wanted to mention with you is the game against Alabama. When I first saw a spread for this, I guess it would have been – I don't know, very early spring, maybe late winter. I think it was FanDuel that had Georgia as a 3.5-point favorite against Alabama. DraftKings now has it at 4.5. If you read perhaps too much into this, it sort of looks like perception of Alabama might be slipping a little bit over the course of the offseason, and that's kind of, you know, obviously embellishing maybe a little bit. But when it comes to Kalen DeBoer in his first year and, you know, obviously a little bit of a different kind of roster, certainly a different style than what Nick Saban brought to the table, do you expect Alabama to sort of remain a national contender and be one of the toughest overall games for Georgia? Or do you think there is a chance that Bama does slip this year in the first year post Nick Saban?
No, I think Bama is still going to be a competitive school that makes the 12-team playoff. They still have good players. And, you know, Coach DeBoer did make the national championship game coming from Washington. So he's in the South now, where I think there's better football players, and Alabama is still traditionally going to be Alabama. I don't care who's been the coach. They have had some down years, but Alabama still historically is still one of the better programs in the country. So I don't – 4 points to me is probably right with the loss of Nick Saban. But Alabama is still going to be a force to contend, and it's not going to be an easy game.
The one number we've seen be consistent all offseason long is Georgia right now, 1.5 favorite at Texas. Terrence, you've played in some big games. You've obviously followed the program closely. Can you remember a bigger regular season game than what this is? Because obviously Texas wants a big season their first year in the SEC. They're coming off a college football playoff berth. That's something that Georgia didn't have. You know, last season, Georgia thinks of itself, I believe rightly so, as the standard bearer in this league here at the moment. Does it get any bigger than Georgia at Texas in October?
I don't think so. I mean, I did go to the Notre Dame game when we played there a few years ago, and that atmosphere was just electric. I'm glad I got the opportunity to go to South Bend and witness that game. But this game now is a SEC game. It'd be the first time we go down to Texas. And Coach Sark is a very, very good offensive coach, and I think a very good off head coach. So it's going to be a tough game. They do have a quarterback that's projected to be a draft pick. They do have players, and Texas is a great football high school state. So they're going to have players as well. So it's going to be a very interesting game. It's going to be a game that I probably would like to go to, just being able to go down to Austin and witness that game live in person like I did the Notre Dame game.
No, I love that. And you mentioned the quarterback. I guess I'll ask you this. Quinn Ewers, as you said, I mean, he's just like Carson Beck. He could win the Heisman. He could be the number one overall pick. But also, I mean, down there or over there, they're talking a ton about Arch Manning. 3 touchdowns in the spring game. He's a Manning. Of course, he's going to get that attention. You know, on the one hand, do you think that Ewers could be the number one overall pick? But on the other hand, do you think he's going to be able to hold off Arch Manning all year long? Or is Manning potentially enough of a prospect that in some form or fashion, maybe a la Tim Tebow in 2006 for Florida, you've got to play him at least a little bit?
I think when you have a guy like Quinn Ewers, you ride with, I don't care if it's Manning, Edwards, whoever with the last name, that sometimes that could divide your team. I know firsthand where, you know, some people want one quarterback, some people want others, and Manning's in a unique situation because a lot of people may think that he's getting this opportunity because of his last name and not because of his skill set. Once you got a true leader on your football team as the quarterback, you let him ride this thing out, and he's probably going to go into the draft this year, and Arch will have the team next year. But when you have you're trying to play this two quarterback platoon and things don't work out, you kind of split the locker room because one part of the locker room may want this quarterback. And now you got a guy that team believes in. If you believe in Quinn Ewers, you let him be the ultimate leader of that football team and let things play out how they're going to play out. And then let Arch come in next year and be the player that he's going to be.
I'll squeeze in one more on this topic. You look at some traditional rivals. DraftKings has Georgia 24-point favorite against Auburn, a 22-point favorite against Florida, a 17.5-point favorite against Tennessee. Do you see one of those games perhaps potentially being more challenging in real life than it appears to be on paper here right now?
Tennessee is always a unique game for me because the uniqueness of their offense, the way they play offense. And I think Nico, their new quarterback, is very talented. I think he's going to be more accurate than Joe Milton throwing a deep ball. He has a live arm. And I think Tennessee has some players. I don't think we will lose that game, but I think that game will be more competitive than what the DraftKings predicted.
All right, so I told some of our audience I'd ask you about this, and I know you're busy with your own football team here right now, but I also know you love, you know, watching as much film as you possibly can. There has been some chatter. I don't think this has actually been confirmed. There's actually a commitment date upcoming. I just think that people think it might happen. Thomas Blackshear is a 4-star receiver from Savannah, goes to Calvary Day, which, you know, not for nothing. It's amazing to me how much talent exists in the Savannah area right now. I would say years ago, I don't know that I thought of that as a hotbed for talent in our state, but it's certainly improved here, including a guy like Elijah Griffin, who may be the biggest target of all for Georgia in this 2025 class. But Blackshear goes to Calvary Day down there, 4-star. It seems like this is probably a Georgia-Tennessee battle. Have you seen much of Blackshear? Of course, you have every right not to, because you're watching your own football team here pretty closely. You're also training a couple of targets who are obviously very much on the wish list for UGA fans with C.J. Wiley and Travis Smith. But how about Blackshear? Have you seen anything from him?
I have. I actually, you know, saw something that he was going to commit soon. And so let me just go and watch him. And I watched him when he was at Benedictine. So I haven't got an opportunity to see his updated film. But the young man has some abilities to break tackles. He looks strong in the lower bodies. So I like him a lot. He's, you know, a bigger receiver right now. Natural. So I like him. And it's crazy that we have three receivers here in the state of Georgia that's in the 25 class, along with Travis Smith and CJ, that I don't think we've seen like this much talent at that position in the same class. Those are three, like if Georgia just decides to just stay in state and get all three of those guys, that's a nice receiving haul for this class. So he's a player that could get yards after catch. He's hard to tackle, and he's elusive. So you look for receivers who could break tackle, make guys miss, and get up the field. So I like the young man's game. If Georgia got all three of the in-state kids, that would be a great class because they'll all three bring something different to the table. And all three are big kids.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with everything you're saying right there. And because, I mean, obviously in the case of Wiley and Smith, those are players that Georgia fans would love to see Georgia be able to get. And I know that Georgia is obviously pursuing them very hot and heavy there too. The other thing that you mentioned, I'm curious about this, as someone who kind of knows how to watch film and things like that, you mentioned Blackshear having been at Benedictine, where they kind of always have that kind of high major quarterback, the sort of, you know, power five level quarterback. When you're watching a receiver, is it a different type of situation when you see him catching passes from a quarterback who's going to kind of play at the power five level? Is it a different kind of evaluation? Because obviously Wiley plays at Milton with Luke Nickel, who's going to Miami. I know that Ethan Barbour, who's a tight end, just transferred there. is it easier to evaluate the quarterback, or should say the wide receiver, when he's playing with the quarterback who's also going to be the kind of high major prospect?
No, not for me. I don't care who the quarterback is and just throwing. I'm looking at the receiver's ability. I'm seeing his ability to first catch the football and how natural he is. Is his ability to track the football, his in-game speed. I don't care about his 40 time and all that. How fast does he play? Does he break tackles? In the high school game, CJ and Travis and Blackshear are just better players than the probably most DBs that they're going against. And do they make the routine catches routine, and do they make the tough catches look routine as well? And that's what I'm looking at at receivers is. Now they're going to go against when they get to college. Now their technique and everything else is going to come into play. So just seeing what type of quarterback they have doesn't do anything for me for us evaluate their skill set.
Terrence, I think it's fascinating, and obviously your expertise can be had and accessed by those who want to become better receivers in their own right there as well. It's the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy, and so for folks who want to hear more from you or get a chance to learn more from you, how can they connect with the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy and getting some of the same kind of work you provided to guys like C.J. Wiley and Travis Smith?
Yes, you can find me on all social media platforms at Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy.
Terrence, have a great week. We'll look forward to talking to you soon, okay?
Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I think that's great, and obviously we'll be watching closely. You know, sometimes these like teaser announcements, and Blackshear kind of put it out on social media. We said this on, was it Tuesday we talked about that? Of, hey, you know, keep your eyes on this upcoming weekend. You know, sometimes that's what it is, and then sometimes it's like committing to an all-star game. You know, it's not always what it's cracked up to be, but in the case of Blackshear, maybe we are heading towards a commitment announcement for him, and interesting to get that evaluation from Terrence. And I'll also say this, that I believe that Terrence is 100% right. You know, Kirby has talked about Georgia wanting to recruit high school receivers. Even though they've had success with the transfer portal receiver, they want to recruit those high school receivers. So it's a very good time to have that kind of talent in state here with Travis Smith and C.J. Wiley and now Blackshear there too. So maybe some good times to be had here. Now, speaking of good times to be had, you know that's the case on board Utopia of the Seas. And obviously, we're still basking in the glory of what was our Dog Nation cruise on board Allure of the Seas. And that's so much fun. And it reminds me of what's going to happen when the newest Oasis-class ship, Allure is an Oasis-class ship, when the newest Oasis-class ship debuts, how incredible that's going to be. And if you're watching a video, one of the things you see is one of the neighborhoods that exists, you know, on the Royal Caribbean cruise ship. That's kind of how the cruise ships are sort of, I want to say divided, but they're the different sections, they call them neighborhoods, and each one of them has a completely different feel. And you saw the Royal Promenade neighborhood, you know, there a moment ago with like some of the cool new concepts they're doing with that. Also, the Lime and Coconut, really kind of making that bigger. It's a poolside bar where you have like the live music and you have all the fun and really kind of try to expand that. And there's also a thing called the View Bar, and View is spelled V-U-E, but it's really about the view you get looking off the side of the ship. If you like a rooftop bar, how about a rooftop bar that overlooks the ocean and the expanse and the gorgeous beauty there on that? Also, one of my favorite concepts involving Royal Caribbean, because sometimes you kind of experiment with the restaurant concept and you say, oh, maybe something else would be better. But something that seems to really have taken hold and become a big deal is the Mason Jar. I like bourbon, I like southern food, I like country music, and it's sort of a combination of all that, a lot of live country music, great bourbon bar with some amazing bourbon cocktails and all the southern kind of food you could want, all of that there. So I get a chance to see Utopia of the Seas in July. I can't wait. You can have your own plans there on that too. Jessica Slater can help you. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater at dreamvacations.com, and find out everything you need to know on that. So we played some clips a little earlier of Kirby Smart at the Region's Tradition in Birmingham yesterday. Hugh Freeze was also there too. And Freeze said something that I think is kind of in line, a little bit anyway. It's going to remind some people of what Brian Kelly said the other day about, hey, we're not in the business of paying players. Freeze said it a little bit differently. And I think that Freeze is going to get some heat for this, but I believe that Freeze's choice of words may be slightly better. Talking about the quarterback situation and saying that given the choice of developing a guy like Peyton Thorne, who was the starter for most of the year last year for Auburn, are going out and getting what he calls a million-dollar quarterback, he says, I'd rather develop Peyton Thorne. Now, the reason why some Auburn fans are not going to like this is because they feel like if Hugh Freeze was going to develop Peyton Thorne, their question would be, why didn't you do that a year ago? Because Thorne did not have, you know, an outstanding year. Maybe one additional year in the Hugh Freeze system, maybe that sets him up to be better. Maybe that's the case. Thorne was one of those guys at Michigan State, and you see this in college football. At Michigan State, Thorne played good against bad teams and bad against good teams, and that's just sort of what he was. And I would say last year in the SEC against on a week-to-week basis, higher level of competition, you know, he looked like a guy who was, you know, kind of struggling at times. But when you go and get, as Freeze calls it, the million-dollar quarterback, Freeze says they didn't really want to do that. And what I'm going to tell you is the reason why this is better than some of the stuff that we heard from Brian Kelly is Kelly acted like the LSU doesn't want to play the game at all. Now, we know that's not true because they tried to get Dominic Williams. They just didn't. And I think they tried to get the dude that went to Oregon. They didn't get him either. So they clearly tried to play the game, but now in retrospect, you know, Kelly sort of tries to pretend they didn't. I think he comes across as really harsh and kind of shrill, and he's just not a very good communicator. In the case of Freeze, what it sounds like he's saying is, we're willing to play the game, but we're trying to be a little bit judicious about how we spend our money. And I do think, for better or worse, this is going to be a lot more of what you kind of see in the college football conversation moving forward, because if we were a big-time NFL show, and obviously we're fixated on college football, but if we were a big-time NFL show, a lot of what we discussed on a regular basis would be who's worth this money and how do you fit him under the salary cap, and this player may be good but not at this price, so therefore you got to cut him. It's just a lot more of a cutthroat conversation. But the one thing in the NFL you don't want to do is spend bad money. You don't want to end up with what they call like dead money on the salary cap. And so in a roundabout way, what Hugh Freeze I think is saying is, we did not see a quarterback in the transfer portal that was worth $1 million. And, you know, I do think college football is probably becoming a little bit more like that, where, you know, you may have money to spend, but spending too much money on a player is not worth it. Even there is no official salary cap in college football, that's probably still a mistake. And I believe that's kind of what Freeze was probably referencing. Speaking of quarterbacks and speaking of transfers, Kentucky has added a transfer quarterback. His name is Gavin Wimsatt. This is a guy that played, albeit not spectacularly, for Rutgers. You know, not terrible, but not spectacular. It seems like to me that, because I had some Georgia fans reach out about, is this, you know, a competition for Brock Vandegrift? That's not really my read on this. I think that Vandegrift had a lot of options, a lot of places he could go. Wimsatt, to me, seems more like a classic backup situation where Vandegrift's going to be the starter, and Kentucky now, I think, can say we have an experienced backup quarterback potentially in place here. And the part that I think is interesting about this is the decision by Wimsatt, because I do think more quarterbacks probably ought to think this way. This is maybe to a certain extent what Jaden Rashada is thinking, even though Rashada is a lot more high profile than Wimsatt is, which is being a number two quarterback in the SEC may be a much better job than being a starter somewhere else, because in the SEC, oftentimes number two quarterbacks get called into action. Injuries are just a part of the game. And being a part of an overall sort of better operation than some other sort of lower, you know, power four team or something like that, it just may be a better situation. And perhaps being patient, perhaps just sort of seeing how it plays out, that's maybe a little wiser course of action than the, you know, accelerated process that some quarterbacks seem to be on here. So I think Wimsatt coming in is just sort of as a traditional backup. And being a backup at a place like Kentucky right now, given the other options that may have been available to him, that may have actually been a pretty sharp choice there in that situation. A couple other things real quick. I saw where Nick Saban said, once again, at the same event in Birmingham yesterday, the thing he misses about coaching are the relationships that he was able to form with his players and the fact that he's still trying to stay close with them. And I'm no fan of Nick Saban. I have obviously tried to make that clear over the years. But I do really feel sympathy in this situation. I mean, this is why I probably in my life, as long as I'm capable, I'll never retire. I'll never. You know, just to think that you don't have that coaching opportunity anymore, I'm guessing that probably does kind of create some angst for Coach Saban. And I guess to a certain extent, you know, credit to him for, you know, being willing to go into retirement and try to, you know, have a next phase of his life. I don't think I'd ever want to. And certainly, you know, for those of us who played sports in high school or something like that, when you're not on a team anymore after having been on a team, there is, I don't know what this is about men, but there is that, there's just a feeling that's just kind of gone. And it's hard to ever get that back again. So when Saban says he misses the relationships, we may not know what it feels like to be Nick Saban, but a lot of us, I think, probably know what he means when he says that. So we don't like Saban as a coach. We, I guess, will wish him well in retirement, I reckon. Also, I'll mention this, and go find the highlights on this. If we play these highlights, the SEC always loses their mind about stuff like this. But for whatever reason, some accounts just put whatever they want to on whatever, but I'll leave that for a different day. Go out and find the Georgia softball team. Yeah, so this is what we're allowed. We have TV professionals that work with us now, so this is what we're allowed to show. We are free to show the celebration last night, and what a thing that was. Georgia winning a thriller in the softball tournament, longest game in SEC tournament history. Auburn hits a home run in extra innings. Georgia comes back and hits a three-run home run to tie, then a home run to walk off. I won't pretend to be a softball expert. I am not. I've never been able to get my daughter to play softball. I've always wished she would, but I've never been able to get her to. Perhaps if she did, I'd learn more about it. But this was a thrilling game last night. Crowd was super into it. It looked like a ton of fun there. So congratulations to the softball team, who is having itself a very good season here right now. And by the way, baseball tonight opens up a series in Columbia against South Carolina with a lot on the line there, the potential of hosting an NCAA regional. So spring sports going pretty well for Georgia here at the moment. Now, on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, I also wanted to do this. We played some football stuff from Kirby Smart a little earlier, but Kirby was also there to play in the event. And I think that Kirby kind of genuinely enjoys this. I like seeing the relaxed version of Kirby. I think everybody deserves to have a little bit of, it's not quite vacation, but everybody deserves to have a little downtime. You know, you gotta unplug a little bit. And I think Kirby's like a lot of us. You know, some of us have a hard time relaxing, and so therefore playing golf and, you know, kind of instead of like just sort of resting your mind, like fixating your mind on something that isn't your regular work life or your family life, whatever else, that can be its own form of relaxation. I think that for Kirby, that's probably true. For a lot of us, that probably feels true from time to time. And so Kirby was out there yesterday with one of the PGA Tour Champions players, Patrick Harrington, of course, kind of a legend in his sport and obviously a very funny personality. And Patty and his caddy, didn't mean to rhyme that, but they were kind of goading Kirby to sort of go for it. I think it's 250 to the pin here. Not lay up, but to actually kind of, you know, go for the green here, which is probably not quite in Kirby's, you know, repertoire. But nonetheless, he was more than happy to kind of play along with this. This is from the PGA Tour Champions. This is, I think, really, really fun. And it's just a little bit of a different side of Kirby Smart, but it's also the same sort of personality that Georgia fans perhaps feel like they've seen before. Good stuff with Patrick Harrington and Kirby Smart from yesterday.
I worry if I pull it, I go through the fairway into that. I can't cut it perfect like you know. You know what I mean? I look at the next shot.
You put everything where you're looking all day. Don't be stressed.
I didn't get 5 wood then. I need to cut it around that corner. 2.5.
Did you bring this man out here to lay up? Is this how you coach?
Oh, absolutely not. We go for it.
Get it out and go for it.
Are we popping here?
Yeah, but do you want to make eagle?
245 with a cut.
Yeah. Okay. You have it. That's your best, beautiful strike. Oh, no.
That's where I would have laid up to.
It's perfect the same layup. Page layup. That was a great strike.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Let me see that. I just want to see if it had reached.
Okay, I'll tell Kisner I went for it. Kirk and Todd wouldn't have.
So I think it's really funny from Kirby Smart, and as one of our commenters said a little earlier, you got the South Georgia accent from Kirby Smart combined with the Irish accent of Patrick Harrington. You need like a whole team of interpreters to kind of get that little thing going there. But the whole chatter is about, you know, do you go for the green from, I think it's 250 yards out. Kirby, I think, eventually settled on a 5 wood. Also, everything's got to be bleeped. We had to edit half that out just because it doesn't quite fit the rhythm of our very family-friendly show. But that's also one of those things that's sort of worth finding. A couple of memes come out of that from Kirby, which I think will probably live on forever. So just really entertaining. And I said this on the X platform yesterday. To me, Kirby Smart is the exact right amount of good at golf. What I mean by that is that I want my coach to have a decent swing. I like the fact that Kirby's got friends. And, you know, some of these coaches don't have any friends, and that's always a little bit weird to me. Kirby's got friends. He kind of knows how to be a dude out there in the golf course. They're kind of busting chops, things like that. Swing, I would say, is good enough. You want your coach, I believe, to have a competent golf swing. But the one thing that you don't want, at least I don't want, the one thing you don't want is you don't want your coach to be a scratch golfer. You just don't want that. If you're a scratch golfer, that means you're not spending enough time recruiting. Like, look who just won the Chick-fil-A event they just did. Mike Norvell was one of the winners. Mike Norvell doesn't have a hope and a dream of sniffing the top five in recruiting. That's the kind of guy that's, you know, a very good golfer. Or like Paul Johnson, the former Georgia Tech coach, probably the best, you know, golfer of all. That tells you everything you need to know about the inverse relationship between recruiting success and golf success. They don't go very well together. So Kirby has the kind of golf swing of a coach who's pretty competent, but at the same time, not the kind of polished game, because he's a guy that's very busy doing his day job on a regular basis, which I would say is exactly the way the Georgia fans kind of want that to be. So good stuff there from Kirby Smart. Make sure you check out the full video if you want to from our friends at the PGA Tour Champions and the Region's Tradition, which I've been to before, and this is not an ad. I'm just talking here for a second. Really fun event. If you like golf, and I can't endorse the PGA Tour Champions enough. I think the golfers do a good job of interacting with the gallery. The celebrity pro-am thing here in Birmingham where they do this, or it's like it's Greystone, it's sort of outside of Birmingham. It's really fun. So if you ever get a chance to go, short drive, pretty cool. I like it. I've been there before, and I think it is really fun. All right, one more shout-out to give you before we wrap up here today. How about our friends at Precision Garage Doors? They've got a five-star reputation for service, the same way the Kirby Smart. Was it a five-star swing? I don't quite know. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but no doubts about what our friends at Precision Garage Doors bring to the table. They've been taking care of folks in the Atlanta area with on-time service for a long time, and that has earned them an exceptional reputation. They answer the phones 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can always get in touch with one of those garage door replacement or repair specialists whenever your need arises. If this is anything from like, you just want it to sound better when that thing comes down, not the of the garage door. You just want to fix that. Or if you need a brand new garage door because it's sort of time to do that, they're here for whatever you need. You want an estimate or same day service or anything in between. They've got thousands of five-star reviews. You can see those there on their site. And there's a $29 service fee that's waived anytime you get some repair work done. So please, find this neighborly company online. It's PrecisionDoorGeorgia.com. That is PrecisionDoorGeorgia.com. So yesterday, had a little bit of a misfire, which was on me. Typically, when there's an error on this show, it is mine. And yesterday it was. We were kind of talking about how earlier this week, we had a very patriotic edition of our Golden Shoe, celebrating one of the members of our audience who's a distinguished member of the armed services. And really, I feel like we had a very statesman-like pose. Today, we get back to the sort of petty trolling that we're famous for. Very funny stuff with our Golden Shoe here today. This comes to us from Dustin Kreider, who writes kind of a funny meme about Florida, that after having a 5-7 record in 2023, that May 7th, which we enjoyed a couple of days ago, has now been declared National Florida Gator Day. So there you go there on that. 5-7 will now be a holiday in honor of the lousy, stinking Gators. I do not hate that at all. Very funny stuff from Dustin there on that front. By the way, speaking of the lousy, stinking Gators, lots of undignified numbers around that program right now, including a long losing streak against Georgia that now dates back 1,279 days. Y'all have a great day. We'll look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.